Hello, I'm Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment.
I'm Mike Foster, the entrepreneur's mentor.
And you are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben and Mike, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk.
And our show introduces you to local trusted experts, whilst we also talk about topics that you, the listeners, tell us is impacting on local businesses and their owners.
For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show, but for more info and Business Brunch related content, please do head over to getradio.co.uk. I definitely recommend it.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben and Mike, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with Ben and Mike. My name is Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment and indeed the Oxford Business Community Network.
And I'm Mike Foster, the entrepreneur's mentor and also the head of marketing and events at Oxford Head Injury Services, the brain injury charity formerly known as Headway Oxfordshire. Now today we're going to be talking about one of the most requested topics that we get from you, the listeners and people within our network. And as you know, our show introduces you to local trusted experts from within our network, whilst we discuss such topical issues in a roundtable format. On today's show, we look forward to welcoming our guests, who are sales trainer Steve Vaughan, and Dilys Gayan, who's an international sales and leadership consultant, trainer and coach, as well as a keynote speaker. So Ben, my usual question for you to kick off with is, you know, as we know as business owners and what we see is that we're always selling. So what tips do you think we could share with our listeners today so that they can fill up that notepad that you talk about?
Great question, Mike. Great question. And I think you're absolutely right. Every business we speak to really, really wants to get better at selling or to sell more or sell more of it, doesn't it? Don't they? So really, really keen to share that question with our two experts. This is the Business Brunch with Ben and Mike. We'll be welcoming our two guests after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch with Ben and Mike on Get Radio. And today we're joined by two sales experts who are going to be sharing with you their knowledge and experience and expertise over the next hour. So make sure you get your notepad. So let's start by introducing our two guests. Steve, I'm going to start with you. Please can you introduce yourself, your background and indeed your business?
Yes, of course, Ben. And thank you both for inviting me on the show. So my name's Steve Vaughan. I'm a sales trainer and business coach. I'm based in Bicester. My background is originally I was a chemist and I spent probably 23 years selling scientific instruments across a variety of markets, applications, both in Europe and in North America. And then about 9-10 years ago, I decided I didn't want to work for big companies anymore. So I changed that approach. And I've been working in full-time sales training now for about 5 years. And why do I work in training? The best thing that you can see really is seeing people achieve their potential. Seeing people who've got the talent, but perhaps just don't know how to use it. Seeing people bring that forward and to really achieve their potential, obviously in sales, is so rewarding, really. My clients are typically small to medium companies in the life sciences, biotech, general laboratory equipment, medical devices, those kind of things. I work for a company called George James. We're a loose collective of specialists based here in the UK.
Amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much. And similarly, Dilys, welcome. If you could please tell our listeners all about you, your background and indeed your business.
Thank you very much, Ben. My name is Dilys Gayan. No Welsh, no French connection. From a little village in the northeast of England. Lived in Oxford for 35 years, as you can tell by this cultivated Oxfordshire accent. I just never seem to have managed to get a hold of. Anyway, cut me in two and I've got sales and marketing leadership running through me just like a stick of rock. I started my what I would call proper career in financial services as a financial advisor, promoted to field sales manager, and then 6 years later to regional sales director. And I loved it with a passion. And that was when I learned in the early days about selling. It's not about you, your company, your product or your service. It's about what your product or your service will do for people. And I realized very early on, I wasn't selling life insurance, pension, critical illness, and so on. I was selling a financial safety net for people so that if their income stopped for whatever reason, they could maintain a standard of living. And I have absolutely had a passion for this right from the beginning. But in 1999, we were top in the country. We were always in the top 5%, but top in the country. And it was then I decided to leave and set up on my own as a sales and leadership consultant, trainer, coach. And I had nothing. I had no contacts. I didn't use agency or anything. I had a blank piece of paper and thought, right, I was a single parent with two teenage children, needed to earn, and I'd earned really good money. So I had to earn good money. And I thought, right, who am I going to work with? Who can pay and will pay? And so I went straight into financial services because that was my background. Made a list of prospects and got on the phone. And within a month, I had a contract with Allied Dunbar, which is Zurich now, Norwich Union, which is now Aviva. I've worked for Barclays, Barclaycard, St. James's Place, lots of different HSBC. I've traveled around the world working with different companies, basically helping the salespeople to achieve their targets. And because many companies are struggling with this and they have a huge attrition rate, and there was some research showing that 18.6% of salespeople leave their organization every year. It takes up to 10 and a half months to get a new person up and running and fully effective. That is very, very costly to businesses. So I work with big companies, helping them with the sales target, with working with the sales teams. And I also work with leaders, helping them to become more effective and efficient and allow them to get the people or to assist the people to do the job right first time. Again, saving time, money, and reducing attrition rate. I want a box in Hyde Park because I want to shout this out to the world. Because people, there's this connotation around sales, you know, ooh, tacky sales. Really good, and Steve, I'm sure, will attest to this, really good professional sales approaches is about taking someone from a position of interest to a position where they want to buy from you because you have asked them questions and you've got the right, you're able to then put the right solution in place, which is relevant to that individual person, company, whatever. And so I'm still busting this myth that sales is tacky and sleazy and so on. So that's me.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. No, thank you for that intro. Dilys, I'm going to stay with you. You've got the short straw, unfortunately. The hardest question of this morning is your song choice. So what is your song choice and why? Oh,
my song choice. Do you know, I gave this a little bit of thought and I actually came up with Everlasting Love, Lionel Richie and Whitney Houston. And the two reasons for this. One is, this is a bit personal really, but anyway, I'll share. I had a nasty first marriage and then I met the absolute, and after many, many years, I made the great escape, and that's a story itself. And then I met this most wonderful man who has been the love of my life. And he is my everlasting love. And he's wonderful with my children, with the grandchildren. He was wonderful with my mother, even cut her toenails. I mean, what son-in-law cuts the mother-in-law's toenails? So that came to mind. And also with regard to what I do, it's an everlasting love. I love it as much today as I loved it when I very first started. So I thought that was very appropriate.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch with Ben and Mike here on Get Radio. Before that song, chosen by Dilys, which is a great song and really reminds me of my last weekend when I was binge watching Whitney Houston for quite a bit of that weekend. So thanks for that reminder, but what a great song. Before that song, we were listening to the introductions from Steve and Dilys about their experience, expertise, knowledge and their background. And we're going to just dive into this now and get some great tips, I'm sure, from them both. Steve, I'm going to bring the first question over to you, if that's okay. Obviously, we could go anywhere with sales, I guess, in terms of conversation, but is there one area of sales that comes up time and time again when you're doing your sales training?
Yeah, without doubt. I think the biggest problem that most salespeople find, no matter what their industry or no matter what field they work in, is not enough opportunities. I think we all, you know, as businesses, can do the stuff once we've got somebody to it's got remotely interested in our products. You know, we know how to take them through the sales process that we have through to being a satisfied customer. But the bit that most salespeople find the hardest is how to find the customer in the first place. You know, we all like a lead. Everybody likes a sales lead. It's great when somebody rings up and says, hey, can you come and sell to me? We all love that. You know, but we're not like what I call sort of fireman salespeople that jump down the pole when somebody rings up and says, oh yeah, we're going to come and see you. What we have to do is what we have to think about is what do we do when we haven't got those inquiries coming in or we haven't got those phone calls or those emails? Because that actually is normal sales. You know, businesses sometimes have unique products or products that are fantastically revolutionary, and that's great and doesn't last forever, of course. But what do we do when we need to find more customers? I think that's the bit that most salespeople struggle with, really.
No, really interesting. Dilys, I'm just going to bring the conversation on a little bit to you and focus on something you said in your intro or terminology. You used the word buy as opposed to sell or be sold to. I think it's a well-known fact that people love to buy, don't they? Especially my wife, online shopping, she loves to buy. But how as businesses do we enable our customers to buy as opposed to sell to them?
That's a really good question, Ben. And I'd like to actually jump on the back of what Steve said there. And first of all, is looking at opportunities. Because this to be successful in sales, you need to be selling or contacting, having a prospect list of the right people, and then marketing with the right message in the right way. And Steve, I saw you hang up there. Did you want to?
Sorry, I was just going to try and get a question in when you finished, Dilys. But nothing to reinforce what you said, really. The importance of prospecting, really. Never stop prospecting. It's the most important thing for any salesperson to do. Even when you've got so much business you don't know what to do with, keep prospecting. Keep looking for business. Keep making those phone calls, as you said in your intro, actually, about starting with a blank sheet of paper, getting off there and getting out and making contact. Never stop prospecting. It's the biggest weakness of most salespeople in my experience. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to add that at the end.
Okay. That's fine. So it's really been focused on this and saying, right, who will pay and wants to pay? And that was what I did when I set up my business in 2000, who can pay and will pay. And so I made a list of businesses. However, you might already be a salesperson and you've got a bank of clients. So here's what I would suggest you do. First of all, can I share a story with you? And this will explain it better. Is that okay? Yeah. So this is my daughter and son-in-law who've got to build a carpentry business. In the first couple of years, I asked him how he was doing. He was sick to death. His head was hanging low. And I said, what's the matter? He said, I'm really fed up. He said, I've got people who ask me for quotes, but then I find out they haven't got the money to pay. I've got people who want extra jobs doing, but they don't want to pay any extra. He said, and I've got late payers. And then I've got jobs that actually I don't like doing because he's a master craftsman and he was doing skirting boards and door frames and things like that. And he said, so I'm doing this work that I don't really like doing. And worse than that, it's not even profitable. And every sentence his head hung. And I said, so have you got any that you've loved working with? And he said, oh yeah, there's this one. I said, right, look, come round with Helen and either bring files or you bring a list of your six best clients and we'll profile them. And that was what we did. And so it turned out that these best clients, they were all over 40, all professional, all earning 60, 70, 80 plus £1,000, all living in the affluent villages in a 20-mile radius of where Drew and Helen live, all work that he absolutely loved, all profitable work, and they all gave him repeat and referral business. I said, right, there's your blueprint. Now, let's have a look at how you're going to contact these people. So we looked at what they read, and they read the Cotswold Life. And so Helen put a half-page glossy in there. And they also received postcode pigeon, which is one of these free things with everybody's ads in. And she put a third size page, that's English, in there on the front in colour. Right. So that they were getting the name out to these people who were their ideal clients. The other thing I said to them is find somebody, and this has been his really best form of leads, if you like. I said, find somebody who's got your client base, but you're not in competition with. And he went, oh, he said, so my architect, he said, I've got two architects. I said, perfect. I said, but if you form a relationship with them and they're giving you leads, you have to do the best job you have ever done in your life because it reflects on them. Anyway, cut a long story short, they've gone from doing these £2,000, £3,000 jobs to now, they're 13 years on now, but he's got a team, he's got some vans, and he's now just finished about 4 months ago a £450,000 job and a £250,000 job that he ran parallel. This is the power of understanding your ideal client and then starting to create a prospect list, like Steve said, adding to it, adding to it, adding to it. And I refer to this as getting into a rhythm so that you're always adding that and you're asking for referrals, always, you know, making sure that people are happy what they've done, and then asking like this, not do you know anyone? Who do you know who is in a similar position to you that I could help in the way that I've helped you? Who do you know who? And then when they say, just say, would you mind letting them know I'm going to be getting in touch with them? Because then it's much warmer. Otherwise, it's still that cold call. So that is really important once you've got your ideal client and then you start with your marketing in a way that isn't about what you do, it's about what you solve. So for Helen and Drew, going back to them, and this is B2C, but the principles are the same for business. I said, what I'd like you to do is get into the shoes of your ideal client and think about what are they concerned about before they bring in a builder carpenter. What's the biggest top of mind issue? And it was things like good communication. They didn't want a shock at the end of the job, that they would be considerate of the rest of their home, that they were reliable. If they said they're going on Monday, they'd be there on Monday. And that they would get the best material to fit their budget. Not the best, but the best to fit their budget. And so Helen put together what she calls a value letter, and it goes out with every quote. I mean, have you ever had that from a builder, an electrician, a plumber? So it differentiates them. It adds to their credibility straight away. And so that was what we did there. For B2B, it's about saying, right, what's the situation now without my product or service? What problems have they got without my product or service? What's the impact of those problems and the ripple effect? So the ripple effect across a business and the benefits of change. And it's those things that you put into your marketing. And if you're looking at email, just another little tip is your first paragraph should be either some research, which is the world in which people operate, so it's more generic, or a trigger event, which is specific to a business or a referral. So you're grabbing their attention right from the beginning, raising their interest with problems that you can solve, and then that call to action. Short, sharp, and to the point.
Fantastic. Well,
that's where you need to start right, in terms of getting people to buy, because they go, oh, I need to hear more. Let's speak to this person.
I've known you for a long time, and I echo what you say about you love sales, because I know from our corporate background, when we bumped into each other first off, that you just love everything you did, and that was infectious for the people that worked with you. And obviously you worked with me later to create my brand of the Entrepreneur's Mentor. That was predominantly something you helped me to come up with. So I don't know that, and I'm sure our listeners' notepads are already starting to fill up. But it fueled actually something, Steve, that I thought I'd ask you about today, because I know that you like to use LinkedIn proactively. And I think, you know, looking at Dilys's model in terms of prospecting, if you like, I think most businesses would get, okay, right, I need to build a prospect list. I know who I want to target. And then they sit there and go, so where do I find them? And the easy one right now is I jump onto LinkedIn, but then they go search with some ineffective stuff. So go on, tell us your tips in terms of using LinkedIn effectively to build that prospect list.
Well, you make a great point. And when I started in sales all those years ago, I think I would have cut my leg off for something like LinkedIn, because it's such a phenomenal resource, really. And I think, let's be honest, most of us went on LinkedIn, let's be honest, to try and find a job. And I know I did when I first set up a LinkedIn post, LinkedIn page. And I think the first thing that people get wrong is that they write their LinkedIn profile all about them. You know, I work for this company, I did this, I've got these qualifications. And, you know, they put on the top of the thing, you know, technical sales specialist for company, yada, 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 yada. So when they do approach a customer through LinkedIn or a prospect through LinkedIn, they're just another salesperson. They just come across as somebody that's just trying to sell them stuff. Yeah. And we all get them. We all get the LinkedIn messages from somebody you've never heard of trying to sell you something, really. So the first thing I would say to anybody that wants to use LinkedIn proactively, before you even start to reach out to anybody, get your basics right in terms of your page, your personal page. And if you work for a company, by the way, it's your LinkedIn page. It's not the company's page. You know, it's your personal brand. So what do I mean by getting the basics right? A proper photograph. I'm not just saying that because my wife's a photographer. I mean, you need a proper profile photo, not your wedding photo with the other half cut off, not you on the beach, not you out in the pub with your mates, a proper headshot. And it's not difficult to get done and it's not expensive. Then you need to use the banner above your profile picture. There's a banner area where you can use as a bit of free advertising almost, really. But again, don't make it, you know, it's better than nothing, but I wouldn't just put your company brand there. Put a picture of you doing your job. Mine is me in this very studio, because, you know, when I set it up, I was doing a lot of remote training. So I wanted to show that I got a proper studio set up, really. And then don't put your job title as your text, next thing that's under the picture, put what it is you do and why you do it. And that's a really important point when it comes to the next part, which is you've got like 2,000 words to explain who you are. And most people say, you know, I'm a technical sales specialist, I'm driven, I'm highly motivated, and all those kind of buzzwords. But instead of doing that, why not write it about why you do it? Most people in business know what they do, I hope. Most people know how they do it, but how many people know why they do it? You know, the first thing I said to you guys was why I'm in training, because I want to see, you know, I'm passionate about seeing people reach their potential. So write your profile, not what you do or how you do, but why you do it and why anybody would care. So there's a few things, first of all, to get right. Glynis also mentioned the importance of recommendations and referrals, and I couldn't agree more. LinkedIn allows you to put referrals, recommendations from customers, actively seek those from a customer that's happy with what you've done. Not the endorsements. I think they're a little bit sort of passe now, really, but proper recommendations where somebody said, I've worked with Steve and he helped me do this. So, you know, before you even reach out to people, get your page sorted, I think is the first point, really. Then when we are reaching out to people, there are two ways that you can make contact with people. There is the free LinkedIn messaging, which you need to be connected with. And then there's the more enhanced version, which you do need to pay LinkedIn for. But let's just focus on the free aspects of LinkedIn to start with. So I think I'm connected with all of you guys on this call. Before I could send you a message on LinkedIn, I have to be connected with you. So LinkedIn allows you to send a standard connection request, which may or may not work. But you do get the option to write, I think it's 140 words. So why not personalize it? Why not make it not about why I want to connect with you, Mike, so I can sell you stuff, but actually why I might be able to help you, because I've done some research into you, I've looked at your LinkedIn profile, I see what it is you do, and I think I might have something to help you, or I might have something of interest. Could we connect? And then hopefully you're more likely to connect with me than not. But all we've done then, and I'm going to refer to one of my my dearest loves as a kid, Star Trek, all we've done is opened a channel. We're not communicating. We've just opened a channel. So I now need to get you another message to get you to respond to me. And again, it needs to be not going straight to, hey, Mike, thanks for connecting. Can I come and sell to you? It should be much more about, oh, I've just recently read one of your posts and I found it really interesting. Is there any chance we could hook up and discuss it more? Or I'm writing an article and I'd like your input. Could you help me? So again, the reason for the next step in the sales process isn't, I want to come sell to you. It has to be personalized and relevant. The way you do that is by putting a bit of time and effort in. Don't be like everybody else, scattergunning messages across LinkedIn. Make it personalized because you've done the research and you understand what's of interest to the person you're connecting with.
Amazing. No, really good advice. And I use LinkedIn all day, every day, working in recruitment. And some bits that have really resonated there. So thank you. Thank you both for your thoughts so far. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is the Business Brunch Podcast, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch with Ben and Mike on Get Radio. Today, we're joined by two experts, Dilys and Steve, and we're going to be talking with you, the listener, really about how to sell. And sales is often a dirty word, isn't it? But I think as looked at by Dilys earlier in the show and indeed Steve, it doesn't need to be. It can be a great thing. Dilys, Steve was making a really kind of good point there around LinkedIn. And did you have anything to add to that?
Yes, something that has worked really well for me is following what Steve said in terms of, you know, it's not about what you do, or it's about what, you know, how you can help somebody or problems you can solve. But I would send a request to connect. And then when they've connected, I ask them if they would help me with some research. Could I have 10 minutes of their time that I'm carrying out some research? And would they be prepared to help? I haven't yet had anyone say no to me. And it is literally 10 minutes if they wanted to be. Very often, I don't do it so much now. I have a lot of repeat and referral business, but sort of earlier days. And people were more than willing to help me. And of course, then I would ask them the questions around sales. Looking at the attrition rate, finding out what are their biggest challenges, what's the impact, what's the ripple effect, you know, and what they thought needed to change. And more often than not, they would say, can you help me? And that was so, so successful. So it was just asking people if they would help me with some research. The other thing that I would reiterate in terms of what Steve says is this sending these LinkedIn sales messages, I can't bear it. Honestly, I can't bear it. So my process, if you like, and I love what you said, Steve, and this is kind of just a little bit of a variation on that, is that I will send a request. They will reply and accept. I thank them for accepting. Then I go to their profile and I look at what they have, their activity. And I will comment. So that all I'm doing is I'm putting my head above the parapet, that they're noticing me. Then I send an email, then I make a phone call. And that's the rhythm that I teach, if you like, is LinkedIn, email, phone call. And people are so frightened of the phone. And, you know, this is a mindset thing. And all of my work, I thread mindset through, because it's about reframing your thinking that you're not being a nuisance to people. You know, they probably won't want to talk to me. You talk yourself out of it. You've got all of this negative chatter that goes on. And of course, your mind moves to the most dominant thought, whether it's positive or negative, and your actions will follow. So if you're full of, I can't, they probably won't be there. They won't want to talk to me. You won't pick the phone up. It'll be like a brick. If you can reframe that thinking and think, if I don't pick this phone up, I am leaving somebody in the position and leaving them with those problems And by picking up the phone, I'm giving them the opportunity to solve the problems or achieve their objective. And in financial services, honestly, I was like a terrier. The company used to send out 60 letters every week and I made 12 phone calls every night. Every night, because I used to think, how many people can I put this safety net in place for? Because I'd seen my mother struggle after my dad died with twins still at home. You know, can we have Levi jeans? No, sorry, we have to go to the market. Can we go on the school trip? No, I'm really sorry. I'll take you to the caravan. It was so hard. I used to say to her, Mum, you're the only person I know who can make half a pound of mince last a week. She was amazing. And that was, so if you can keep top of mind the difference that you can make, the phone will just be like a feather, because you think, I need to talk to people and give them the opportunity. You've got no right to make the decision whether somebody is going to say yes or no. You have to give them, and it could be no, not right now. I have never had anybody be rude to me. And swear, never. So give people the opportunity, but switch that, reframe your thinking around it.
Some really, really good points there, Dillis. Steve, you're putting your hand up. Would you like to add?
Well, I just wanted to reinforce a couple of things that Dillis said, really. First of all, the importance of commenting and interacting with people's posts. LinkedIn is social media, and people forget the social in social media. You know, people who sort of put one post on LinkedIn once a fortnight, they wonder why nobody sees it. You do need to put the time into LinkedIn. You need to spend the effort and time connecting with people, but also commenting on people's posts, interacting with people. And the second thing I wanted to say on that is only 5% of LinkedIn's users regularly post content. And it's not hard, and both you guys do this regularly, but it's not hard to just put a post up of something you think your network might find of interest, something you've read elsewhere, or a photo of you doing your job. As you know, I put videos on there from time to time. But don't be afraid to experiment. People say to me, LinkedIn's getting like Facebook these days. Well, that's possibly because LinkedIn wants to go that way. And remember, LinkedIn is a business. It will do what's right for its business, first and foremost. And my best performing LinkedIn post over the last 12 months was not me promoting my training or me, you know, doing my job. It was me doing a April Fool saying I was quitting my job to become a full-time rock singer. And that was my best performing post. I had about 70 people interact with me. I got 2 sales leads out of that. So don't be afraid to try things on LinkedIn. And then the very last thing I want to say is just to reinforce what Dede said about no, there's 2 sorts of no. One is not ever, or no, not today. Many years ago, when I lived in North America, I went to a sales training conference for a day, one of these very American sort of events in New York. And the guy was telling his background, who his first sales job was selling door-to-door life insurance in New York in 1982. And New York at that time was a pretty violent place. And his boss used to send him out at the start of the week with a piece of card. And on that card, the word no was written 50 times. And he was told to come back with 50, every time he knocked on a door and somebody said no to him, to cross a no off. And if he came back with 50 no's at the end of the week, he got $1,000, which was a lot of money then, a lot of money now. And the reason his boss did that is that he knew out of those 50 no's, he'd get at least 2 or 3 yeses. So the importance of persistence, the importance of, as Glynis says, making those calls, making those contacts, always be prospecting. It's probably the most important thing that people can take away from me on this session today.
Amazing. No, really good advice. I'm going to come to you with a hard question. Maybe your objection handle it. No, I'm teasing. Okay. No, the hard question is, similar to Dillish, you've chosen a song for our listeners this morning, which is always the hardest question. So what's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Well, again, my heart is classic rock music, but I'm not sure I wanted to inflict that on people on a Sunday morning. So bear in mind, I think the customer you're dealing with is always the most important thing. And because sadly she passed away recently, I'd like you to play Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You.
The Business Brunch with Ben and Mike. Sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch with Ben and Mike on Get Radio. Today we're talking about sales and really how you listening at home can sell better and sell more and sell in the right way. Something that I often hear is around objection handling, and it's hard to know what the objection is. Did they have any objections? I don't think so, but they haven't gone forward for this reason. So, what's thoughts around the topic of objection handling?
To me, objections are good news. If you get an objection in the sales process, it's really good news. And I'm not losing my mind when I say that. Why is it good news? It means the customer's interested. If they weren't interested, they wouldn't bother to raise objections. They'd find a way of moving you on. You know, when your salesperson comes back and says, oh, there are no objections, I'd worry. That probably means I've lost the sale. What I want is customers to be thinking about what we're talking about and thinking, well, I'm not sure how it's going to work for me, and raise a concern. I prefer to use the word concern in sales. It's objection's quite a hard word. So if customers raise concerns, it means they're at least considering your solution or your product. Yes, there's some work to be done, but at least we're in the game. Does that kind of make sense? And then from then on, really, it's a case of, is the objection something, or the concern something that is real, i.e. they've got something that they're worried about and we're going to have to address it, or is it a false objection? Sometimes customers will, I know this might seem strange, customers will perhaps exaggerate concerns or make them more important than they really are as a way of sort of moving you on or justifying a decision they've already made. So how do we find out those things? We ask some great questions. We ask questions to start with: who, what, where, when, how, why. Why being the most important of all, because why really drills down its details. And if we can understand what the concern is, if it's something we can address with our product or service, then obviously explain how. If it's something that we can't, we just physically, the customer wants it in red and we only do it in blue, then we're not going to repaint it. So it's a case then of trying to make it look small compared to everything else that hopefully the customers liked about your solution. So objections are a normal part of sales. We should welcome objections. It means we're in the game, but yes, we've got to do some work to overcome them.
Phyllis, I'm sure you can add to that, and you see you got your hand.
Yeah. My mantra is prevention rather than cure, first of all. So this begins right at the beginning, making sure that you're working with your ideal client, first of all, this potential client you're able to help. I'd like to just throw something else in here as a tip. Everyone that goes on your prospect list, please put them in google.com/alerts. Google.com/alerts. And then anything that's going on across the internet, you will get an alert, and you can choose whether you want daily, weekly, monthly. I certainly wouldn't go for daily because you'll be inundated. And you can use that in your marketing messages, right? You know, if it's a generic thing, like I was saying about using some research, or if it's a trigger event, something like maybe a merger, or there's a new CEO, or they've brought in a new head of sales, or whatever, it might be their 50th anniversary. Anything that you can use in your marketing messages. So in terms of objections, make sure you've got your ideal client and your messages resonate. You know, using either that research, the trigger event, or the referral, and the and then using a verb of what you can do, that verb, like, for me, I help increase sales revenue, right? And just as an example of, I will get to the objection in a minute, but I just want to share this bit with you. Here's an example of some of a trigger event. So I had this, I was getting business with pharmaceutical companies. So I put a pharmaceutical, quite a few pharmaceutical companies actually, into google.com/alerts. And I got this alert one day, and it said they'd issued their financial report, a quarterly report. So I had a look in it. In the executive summary, the chairman, and I can't remember his name, so whatever his name was, said, and I'm paraphrasing this, that they had increased the turnover by 12% year-on-year turnover, which was phenomenal, by the way, but they would be negatively affected to the tune of 5% on currency fluctuation. I knew Mark was, from my research, I knew Mark was my decision maker, so I sent him an email. Dear Mark, and here's my first paragraph referring to the trigger event. Dear Mark, I noticed from your recent financial report that your chairman said, and I couldn't paste that paragraph in there. The next paragraph said, I work with pharmaceutical companies like yourselves, helping them to increase revenue to mitigate any losses in currency fluctuation. Now, there's products now that you can, and Mike, you'll be very aware of this with your banking background. Well, that was hard to say. I didn't even know whether there was product or not, but that was what I put in there. Next paragraph, if you're interested in increasing your sales revenue to mitigate any losses, please contact me on or email me at, alternatively, I'll call you on Thursday morning at 8:45, whatever the date was. I got a call back from that before lunch. Now, I'm not pretending that you're going to get that with everyone, but because it was relevant. And in the subject line, I put losing 5% on currency fluctuation. Well, of course, they opened it straight away. Anyway, went to meet Mark. He asked me to present to the board, which I did. And a guy there said to me, Dennis, how did you know that we were losing this on currency fluctuation? I said, I saw it in your financial report. He said, there's thousands of financial reports. How did you find ours? I said, I'm just interested in you and your business, and I've been following you. Whoosh, my credibility went up to the ceiling. So immediately they wanted to talk to me about how I could increase revenue per se. And I went on to deliver a training program. I did coaching with them and so on. So it mitigated the chance of objections because of my credibility. I established that credibility. I could share with them the results that I had with other businesses and collaborated with them. So I don't just put a training program together. I speak with the people who are going to be involved in the training program. So I'll take maybe four or five, usually five actually, people that I interview, because the top people give me a view of what's going on, the challenges. When I speak to the people at the sharp end, they can often give me a different view, which allows me to have a holistic view of what's going on, so I can put the absolute right program together for them. When you do that, you're involving the people, and then you take them through the questioning. And I still love Neil Rackham's spin model. Situation now, problems, impact, ripple effect, and financial impact. Nobody's going to spend £50,000 if they think they've got a £50 problem, right? So the financial impact of the problem, you need to be finding out, and the benefits of change. And then you put your solution in. Only then, if you talk solution prior to that, you've paid too soon. You've talked product too soon, right? You need to understand, then you can put that relevant solution in. It will reduce the amount of objections you get. However, if you do, like Steve said, ask the questions. So find out what the real reason is. So if somebody says, oh, it's a bit expensive, find out, that's interesting, what makes you say that? And get the real issue of what's going on here, like Steve said, with your open questions. And then agree with the thought process, but not the actual objection. I can understand why you might think it's too expensive. I've had customers in the past who felt exactly the same initially, but what they found was, and then you're outweighing this objection, and then you close again. So that's my take on handling objections. And like Steve, if somebody's bringing an objection up, is that level of interest there? You know, and again, as Steve said, there can be a smokescreen, and this is why you've got to find out what the real reason is, because you can't deal with it's too expensive. It's too broad. You have to get down. And just another little tip, if they say we can get it cheaper elsewhere, just tell me more. How much cheaper elsewhere? Well, we can get it, you know, 10 grand cheaper. Then deal with the difference and not the total of your price. Does that make sense? So you deal with that 10,000 as opposed to maybe 110,000, and they can get it for 100,000 somewhere else. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing. We are almost out of time. We have got a minute at a push. So one of the things we occasionally do is top tips. So if in 30 seconds, maybe 25 seconds, Steve, you had to put your neck on the line and give one tip, what would that be?
That's easy. Always be prospecting. Never stop prospecting. Day and night, prospecting is a way of life. It's the most important thing for any salesperson to do. No matter how busy you are, no matter how much stuff you've got on the go, always keep prospecting.
Amazing. Gosh, that was well on time. And Dilys, 25 seconds, what would be your top tip?
Right, ideal client. Always be prospecting with your ideal client. You've only got so much time in the day. Make sure that it's with the right people that you that will value you and you value them and you love working with them. And get into the rhythm. Like, it's, you know, Steve saying about prospecting, get into the rhythm of it. Don't just a little bit here, a little bit there, and time block. Here's my time for LinkedIn. Here's my time for email. Here's my time for telephoning. Here's my appointment time. That's my tip.
Amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much. But I'm so disappointed to say that is the end of the show. Hopefully one of you can think of an objection handling technique for the guys at Get Raider to give us 2 hours. But anyway, thank you so much to Dilys and Steve for joining us on the Business Brunch with Ben and Mike today on Get Radio. Pleasure. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you so much both for sharing such expertise and for your time. And also just for really, really helping those listening at home. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes, thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Business Brunch with Ben and Mike here on Get Radio. Next week, we're going to be talking about the business behind football. And our guests are Liz Verrell, who's the CEO of Berks and Bucks Football Association, Stephen Carer, who's from Aberdeen United Football Club, and Rob Porter from Oxford United in the community. So join us then for that conversation. But just before you go, a reminder that our show goes out every Sunday on 11. The radio, and then our podcast format comes out on the Monday, available via all your podcast platforms. And if you prefer to watch the video on Facebook or on Get Radio's website, that comes out on a Tuesday. But for now, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, enjoy the rest of the radio, and we'll see you next week.